Oh, yeah, baby. Late breaking news on the world of plumbing in the greater Phoenix metro area. Stampede Plumbing is open for business. Y'all need to know that. Now, they've recently gone through an ownership change. So at Rosie on the House, the tightest screened referral directory on the planet, we had to rescreen the new owners. They passed with flying colors. Stampede Plumbing, been Rosie certified since 2006. They've been a great partner taking care of Phoenix area homeowners for 30 years. Stampede Plumbing, open for business. And they're running specials with all of y'all home right now. You can get their full service plumbers. But right now they're offering a $99 drain cleaning with accessible clean out to keep all systems a go, go, go. Hey, how about that? That's Stampede Plumbing. Yes, you can find them at rosieonthehouse.com. Yes, they are open for business. And yes, they are absolutely Rosie certified. And yes, they are operating currently under all COVID-19 safety precautions and protocols.
If you scroll through municipalities' Twitter accounts and Facebook accounts, about every third or fourth post is a reminder not to flush anything but toilet paper down the drain.
Yeah, baby.
For the love of God, please.
Oh, yeah.
It's putting quite a strain on the reclamation industry this right now.
Show them the post pictures, folks.
No.
It's ugly.
No. So if you're one of those people that started using alternate measures and you've noticed a little bit slower of a drain draining or backup, and it might be a candidate for a good clean out.
Yeah,
what are they doing it for? $99?
Tell Uncle John that's not what the paper coffee filters are for.
Our tree of the month is the Jababui?
Tababuya.
The pink trumpet. And we've got the caller who wants to know more about it. Charles in Phoenix, welcome to the program.
Yes.
So we just lost him. We'll call him back. And that's going to bring us to Aaron with a eucalyptus tree that we're going to throw to Steve Price, the branch manager. And Pete brought this up earlier that, how ironic is it? Your title at an arborist company is branch manager.
Perfect.
You need a leaf manager?
There's a joke in there somewhere.
A root manager? Aaron, go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a eucalyptus tree mature that a couple years ago during the big storms lost just about all of its branches, and it's right now it's a stick with some shoots on it, and I'm debating whether to chop it down and replace it or let it be. What would you suggest,
Aaron? Based on what you just said, it's a top candidate to get an arborist out right away to take a look at it, because even though eucalyptus trees are known to drop branches when they get heavy and kind of dry and over the years, and even sudden branch drop, but if you lost many branches during a storm, that's definitely a sign that something else is going on, and the tree could be very unhealthy and actually a hazard based on that. So definitely get someone out to take a look. The other issue is as those sprouts regrow, a lot of times they're very weakly attached, and then it's even much worse if the tree is diseased or sick inside and has a lot of decay and you don't see it. So someone needs to come out, check it out, maybe do some sounding on the tree and find out how bad the decay is and make a determination for you on site. But I wouldn't put it off for sure.
Okay.
You know, you can always call
I do
us.
Have another question. On jacaranda?
Hey, go ahead.
Okay. So we planted a jacaranda. My wife wanted one a couple years ago. And I've noticed, I'd say it's about 8 foot tall now. And I've noticed some of the leaves are kind of drying out and getting yellow. I'm not sure if it got frostbitten or if it's something else.
Well, it could be that some of those leaves were just carried over, that they didn't fully drop during the sometimes these mild winters. Some of our deciduous trees will carry leaves right through the winter, and then they'll have to drop them before putting on new leaves in the spring. So you might have that natural leaf turnover. Also, jacarandas are very frost sensitive, and they can show a little bit of frost damage. But they're also they need a little bit of iron, and I'm sorry, they like a little more acidic soil, and sometimes they can show some signs of some nutrient deficiencies that just due to our high alkaline content in our soils, sometimes they're just not getting the nutrient uptake they need to put on a nice display of leaves and bloom. So in the early going, it might be a consideration to think about fertilizing that jacaranda or amending the soil to try to improve some of the soil conditions, possibly something to buffer the pH to help that tree to get along. Because once they get established, they're beautiful, but they are sometimes a little more difficult to get established, especially in the early going. If it's a young tree, it might look a little scrawny in those first few years. So don't lose patience with your jacaranda, but know that in the first few years, it may not look as glorious as some younger trees that seem to get fast out of the blocks, so to speak. Jacarandas sometimes are a little bit slower getting established.
We appreciate the call. We've got Charles back on the line. Wants to talk about the Pababui. Yep. The pink.
I'm here.
The pink tropical.
I moved here from Santa Barbara a few years ago, and they told me that the trumpet tree, I really loved it, that it was poisonous to pets. Is that true with this one?
Oh, boy, I'm not going to touch that one. I'm not 100% sure. If you go to the ASPCA website, they have a list of trees that are known to be toxic to pets. I would trust the veterinarians first before me.
Oh, okay. Well, a lot of them say that these plants, they'll just give them an upset stomach, which is a lot. So I'll check that. Do you know if the strawberry tree grows here?
Don't know the strawberry tree. Do you know the genus and species?
No, they used to have them up and down the streets in the Santa Barbara area, and it sort of looks like a strawberry. They're edible, and you can just pick them right off the trees. So,
Charles, would those be those little mini strawberries you could pick off the tree and eat them? They're like a bush.
Yeah. No, they're a tree.
Oh,
so.
Okay.
Yeah, in a town called Orchid, they had it up and down on Main Street. They had it in a couple other towns in Santa Barbara. So,
my brain's not working out. Our native tree, a little bit higher elevation with that nice coppery bark. Help me.
Yeah,
Manzanita?
Yes, I believe it's in that genus.
Okay. Yeah, you know, it's surprising if you have the microclimate here, usually a sheltered area on the east or north side of buildings, there's a surprising number of trees that can be grown in the low desert. We had a customer who grew up a ginkgo in one of my, which is definitely out of this region. But yeah, it's pretty nice that there are several plants that grow really well in California that can be grown here. If you give them the right conditions and usually protected from afternoon sun.
It's Arbutus, sorry.
Arbutus.
Arbutus unido.
But of course it is. And I'm not sure what kind of pets he has, but looking at this picture of this pink trumpet tree, if it's a dog, unless it's chewing the bark, it's not going to be able to get to the leaves. You know.
But stuff does drop.
Stuff does drop.
That's the problem. Yeah.
I don't know about you, but I don't notice my dog often eating leaves.
Yeah, we've had some problems with, pets do just love to chew on. We had some discussion about pets eating the little queen palm seeds that would drop out of queen palms, and they're sweet little fruits, actually. But they have to be careful because they sometimes can't digest the little pit that's inside an olive or the pit inside those little fruits that they're chewing. So Yeah, you do need to be careful because there are some toxic plants out there that are very, very dangerous. The one that does come to mind is the Texas Mountain Laurel. Has a seed pod. It's a very hard seed pod, hard to break to get into the toxic red inner seed. But those still are something to you might want to sweep up and clean up, especially if they're underfoot and they might get crushed underfoot, because those little beige seed pods that fall off of a Texas Mountain Laurel have a red seed inside that if consumed are pretty deadly.
And then John, aren't oleanders known to be harmful to horses and
pets
as well?
Yeah. You want to keep oleanders away from your horses, especially because they'll chew on those and get awfully sick if not. Yeah.
I just wanted to correct myself. Manzanita is Arctostaphylos, not Arbutus, just for the tree nerds out there who are going to call in.
They're out there. Now, on our calendar, we've got water scheduling. Let's talk about that. We're in our season transition. We're coming up to the summertime. What are the best practices of watering? And it looks like they're throwing that one to you, Steve.
Oh, they are. The best practices of watering. Great. First, I just wanted to make a point that we did look up that tree, that strawberry tree, on that question. And it's not listed in our zone, but like John said, many things you can grow in little microclimates in your yard when it's set up just right. And we, as arborists, are surprised many times we go and somebody's growing something. So I would absolutely give that a try here. Just try to keep it definitely shaded and throughout the summer. Don't let it have any intense heat. So, yeah, I would have fun with that and then let us know. Call back sometime. Watering, it is definitely time to start increasing your irrigation. Through the winter months, it should have been backed way off. We've seen a lot of problems with the excessive rain that we had or the non-standard rain amounts we've had over the last several months and last year as well, where people don't shut off their irrigation. They don't monitor that. They just kind of leave it set and forget. And we've seen a lot of Phytophthora disease, especially over the last year and a half or so. And then it surprises everybody because it's under the ground, it's under the gravel, and it's really doing a lot of damage. But with that said, as it starts to warm up, it's really critical that you go through your irrigation system, turn it on, check the settings, and start increasing that time. But if you're not occasionally out there checking what the soil moisture is like in your yard, then again, you can just be either overwatering or underwatering, no matter what you do. So we just encourage people to go out or have your landscape contractor go out and check, move the gravel, check the soil, see what's going on before you start adjusting your controllers. Because again, if they've been left on, or if you had a leak, the ground might be still very saturated. You start increasing the water, the nights are still pretty cool, and you're going to have a lot of problems moving into the summer. So, again, it's easy to just say increase your water, but you should check the system out first, make sure everything's working properly, check your soil moisture, and then adjust from there.
And, Steve, I love what you said about increasing the time. Not the frequency of watering, but the time on the established cycles. It would be much better, for instance, to water twice a week for 3 hours than to water three times a week for 2 hours.
Absolutely.
Because what you're doing is you're allowing more time between waterings, but you're also getting a deeper depth of saturation. So often we have people just increase the numbers of days that they're watering. That would probably not be as preferable as it would be to just increase the time on the frequency of the cycles that you have now. Because we're trying to avoid that situation where we're putting water on top of water on top of water. Ideally, the soil profile should dry out between waterings. And, we can't really tell you how many gallons to put on. And, of course, it's all dictated by the dispense rate of your emitters and how much water is being dispensed in a given hour of time. But and soil texture and structure is so different from place to place. But the general rule is that you want to try to allow that soil profile to dry out before you're applying water again. And you'll be surprised in a lot of our clay soils that we have incredibly high water holding capacity in our soil. And you'll be surprised that even though the surface soil might appear to be dry, just a couple inches below, it's holding water very well. So don't just think that because it's dry, it's time to water again.